නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු වරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු වරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු වරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ අත්ථි ඉදපච්චයා ජාති තීටි පුත්තේන සතානන්ද අත්ථි ඉති සවචනියං කිම් පච්චයා ජාති තීටි චේවදේය භව පච්චයා ජාති තී චස්සවචනියං තීටි Dear Dhamma friends, we are going to take the same topic, namely the dependent origination, and according to the particular sutta, we are going to deep further into the subject with this particular quotation that I just cited. As I mentioned yesterday, we have taken the Mahanidana Sutta, which is you find in the Sutta Pitaka, the discourses, and specifically in the Digha Nikaya, where you find the long discourses. There are the Buddha starting with very obvious, prominent suffering and finding the causes, root cause, and tracing it back to its origin. And yesterday we discussed about very prominent suffering, that is to say, the old age, diseases, and death. And everyone living in the human world are concerned about them, and they are creating so much of uncertainty and fear. Therefore, if they are animated to get rid of these old age diseases and the death, they will be happy to do it. So therefore, if someone is going to find the root cause for this old age, diseases and death, it will be like a very important issue, and therefore the Buddha, starting from that point, and teaches Venerable Ananda, if someone is going to ask whether there is a specific root cause, a specific conditionality for this old age diseases and the death, you must say there is a reason. If someone is still interested in asking, you must say the birth is the root cause, and as far as there is a birth, whatever may be this domain, it is a universal feature. Whoever may be born going to experience this old age diseases and the death. So therefore, even though beings are not happy to understand this, this is the truth. This is what one has to realize. So therefore, whenever such a difficulty arises, whenever such a physical and verbal diseases or difficult arise, one must not run in panic to find quick way out. Of course, this is the way to get rid of the burning nature, the torturing nature. But even though they manage to get rid of it, they can only get rid of the symptoms, but not the disease by itself. So therefore, one has to go back to the root cause. The root cause is the birth. But as we discussed yesterday, many consider the birth as auspicious, good thing, desirable thing, but the old age diseases and the death appear to be very bad. But the Buddha says both of them are the two sides of the same coin. So if you are going to take one, inevitably the other part will come. So therefore, whenever you are selecting and choosing the birth, whether you consider it as a good or bad, you are bound to get all these diseases and the death. So therefore, whenever you are to find the root cause for this old age and diseases and death, one has to, one or some or the other, find this birth, and that is to say, going to the root cause. So therefore, in the meditation, in very micro level, we always, specifically in the Vipassana meditation, try to see the root cause. So immediately it will not, may or may not answer the burning question, but it is going to give a lasting answer. It is going to give a durable answer. So therefore, those who have patience, those who have self-well-being, they are looking into the root cause. So whenever the teaching of the Buddha is summarized or put into the summary form, that you can say the Buddha is always asking the people to look into the root cause. That is what happened when Upatissa and Kolita, two young people, when they went into in search of truth during the time of the Buddha, and happened to meet Venerable Asaji, one of the enlightened disciples at that time. And looking at that Venerable Asaji's behavior and all the other demeanor, and he found it is very calm and quiet person, and he approached, specifically Upatissa approached him and asked, what is the kind of discipline, what kind of teaching you are following, and who is your teacher? And then the Venerable Asaji was reluctant to teach because it is very profound, and he also he claimed himself is a newcomer. But some or the other, the young Upatissa asked him, Bhante, would you mind to tell me the gist or the crux of the teaching? I will try my best to understand in detail. Then only when the Vasaji told, Ye dhamma, hetu pabhava, te sang hetu, tasagata tagato aha. Whatever the phenomena arising out of the course, my teacher is always stressing and pointing to the course. So that very single message was enough for the Upatissa to understand how the world, which is chasing behind the symptoms and try to alleviate the symptoms instead of the disease or the root cause or the causative germ. So instead the Buddha asking everyone to take little time and understand, to go to the cause, go to the root cause, and that is how you can have this lasting answer or durable answer. So you have to not get panicked, not to get rushed into the situation, but take it as yet another event and understand again and again. To see the root cause. That is how when we are in the meditation also, even though we can't see why we should see into the root, it will take long time for one to understand how this meditation, which is directing to the root cause, going to benefit in one's own meditation as well as one's in day-to-day life outside the meditation retreats. So, whenever someone is going to do samatha meditation, that means concentration meditation, or vipassana, for both the meditations, both the traditions, one has to be very mindful as to see things as and when it arises. So, specifically in vipassana, when and where you selected your primary object, you keep on observing the same object as and when it arises with your full diligence and the full vigilance. And of course it is not an easy task to keep the object in view with object with face to face. But anyway, if you manage to see the object in such a way to keep it face to face, then your whole effort, your diligent effort and precise aiming must be to see the arising part of the particular object, to see the birth, to see the arising part. When you are managing and when you are keep on practicing, as and when your mindfulness become very sharp, when mindfulness becomes very efficient, you can feel the very subtle start of the object. For example, yesterday we took the in-breath and out-breath, or if you are taking rising and falling the abdomen, or in walking meditation, your left leg and the right leg, wherever it may be, when and where the object become familiar, you have to look into the, you must direct your mindfulness to see the beginning of it. So when and where you try to see the rising part, beginning part of the object, you will see, for example, in the, as we discussed in the discussion yesterday evening, already arisen rising the in-breath and out-breath, you can discreetly understand these are the features and characteristic qualities and modes of the rising, the in-breath, and these are the qualities and these are the characteristics of the out-breath very clearly. But the mystic thing is, when and where you are to see the arising part of the in-breath and the arising part of the out-breath, that's a huge similarities. I will repeat it again for the clarity. If you see only the already arisen cause in-breath and out-breath, that is what happens for the beginners. You are bound to see, discriminate, discrete difference between the in-breath and out-breath. But when and where you become successful to see the beginning of the in-breath and the beginning of the out-breath, and more you practice this way, you are bound to see similarities. So when that happens, not to entertain doubts, not to get distracted. You must have preparedness, you must have the theoretical understanding. Even whatever the object, once arisen, once it has taken its own shape, it distinct from the other objects and stand separately. But if you manage to see the arising part, you see almost all the objects have the similarity. So therefore, when and where the meditation or your attention or your mindfulness leading to arising part of the object, your meditation become boring, meditation become monotonous, meditation become lethargic, not so juicy, not so interesting, because similarities. So therefore, unless otherwise you go prepared, when and where it is developing the mindfulness, a kind of a monotonous, kind of a lethargic attitude appears. So under such circumstances, you may either entertain doubts as to whether my mindfulness is becoming inefficient, whether my concentration is distracted, or why should I feel this sloth and torpor, why should I feel uncomfortable, unless otherwise you are being instructed or well prepared. So purpose of these kind of talks, purpose of these kind of instructions, theory knowledge is to understand there is a huge qualitative difference between already arisen mature object and arising object. So therefore, jati, the birth, the arising part, to see, you must be ready to accept the evolution of the object from equal characteristic, common characteristics to personal characteristics, individual characteristic, intrinsic characteristic. This is what the Buddha says, if you are patient enough, if you go prepared, you can see this evolution, you can see this transient nature, and that is called viparinama. So for that, you must always be with the object from its very beginning, outset, to the maturity. So even in this transient nature, so very prominent, very significant at the arising, at the very arising mode, and more it's mature, it become almost stable, almost like static. So our untrained mind, our faculties are more happy to see stable, static objects, then it becomes develop confidence. But in Vipassana, you are being asked to see the beginning part. More and more you to see the beginning, you feel it's a flux, it's a changing nature, a transient nature. So our mind is not usually prepared to withstand it, to understand it, to take it as in a productive way. So therefore, early part of meditation is quite difficult for the beginners, but it is not a mistake of that particular beginner's attitude. That is the way it happens. So therefore, patient people, again and again by revising, applying again and again the same effort and the diligent effort and the precise aiming, understand when and where you to see that this transient nature, you must be prepared to see still the beginning of the object, still the onset of the object. That is how one can proceed further, advance towards the beginning of the input and the beginning of the output. Whenever you become familiarize it, whenever you become master it, you will take within a very short time, you can in a consecutive sittings, one day you will see quickly this changing. Your mind will not be bewildered, your mind will not be upset, but accept the transient nature. So when it happens to, whenever you are ready to see this subtle rising part of the object, you see the rising part of the in-breath, rising part of the out-breath are almost equal. So as according to your sensitivity, after a certain amount of grossness, you are about to feel this is as in-breath and this is as out-breath. But if you are very sharp, if you are increasing your sensitivity, that is what happens with the repetitive application, you are bound to see this, the onset of the phenomena, and there it is appear like a flux. From that flux, in-breath rises and it ceases to exist, and then the out-breath rises, ceases to exist. So, when and where your mindfulness becomes steadfast, when and where mindfulness becomes continuous, you see that before starting of the out-breath, there was a complete cessation of in-breath. And in between the cessation of the in-breath and the out-breath, there's a kind of a continuity. And same thing, you can put it in this way. If you manage to see mindfully, with full vigilance, the cessation of the out-breath, there's a gap within. After that only, the in-breath starts. Unless otherwise you are sharp enough, unless otherwise you go prepared, you will never see this gap. So therefore, more and more you observe the object vigilantly, immediately, diligently, you will find the in-breath phase and out-breath phase. There's a clear cut difference, and in between there's a gap. So this gap, it is a kind of a datum line. It is like kind of a substrata where you don't have any kind of control. Whenever the in-breath and out-breath happen, whenever the in-breath and out-breath becoming gross and gross, you feel like you can do forced breathing, you can do intentional breathing, or you can do let it happen in the involuntary way. So when and where the in-breath and out-breath taken into shape, you feel you can employ your will, employ your voluntary and involuntary connection to it. But when and where you got this datum, the basic substrata, basic datum, datum line, your controllability completely loses. I think that also contribute for many yogis to develop uncertainty, to develop the fear. So therefore, they hardly explore into this continuity. What happens is, unless otherwise you go prepared, you feel something wrong because you are bound to see these gaps. Not only that, with that understanding, if you observe the in-breath, within the in-breath also it is happening you feel like I think there are thousands of little in-breaths. Within the out-breath also, there are thousands of little out-breaths. So they are happening in the stages. There is no continuity. They are happening in a stage-wise. Everywhere you bound to see these gaps in between. Basically, it happens in between the out-breath and the next in-breath. So therefore, when and where you keep on practicing in an intensive meditation retreat, third day, fourth day onward, you get seasoned to the place, you get familiarity with the people, and once settled for a successful yogi, feel that calming down of the in-breath and out-breath happen very quickly. And they are, if you wish to take the situation under control, if you wish to take it, get it more seasoned, if you pay attention to the end of the out-breath, 2-3 out-breaths time, the calmness can go into sense. And later, once it becomes familiarized, you feel as if no in-breath and out-breath like, because the in-breath and out-breath become very calm and quiet. You can't perceive it, you can't feel it, but your rationality, rational mind, or you can deduce, you are not dead. Your breathing is taking place, some or the other, but impossible to touch it, impossible to feel it. And that is how there is a kind of a continuity or undercurrent, which unless otherwise you go sharp and prepared, it usually do you don't fail in day-to-day activities. So, for example, if you are going to answer the question only for the perceived part of the in-breath and out-breath, even if you are successful, you are still, there's a part, there's an unperceivable part of the in-breath and out-breath, that is something like the tip of the iceberg and the part of the iceberg under the water. Only you can see the tip of the iceberg, so that is the part we call the conventional suffering or conventional experience in our superficial mind. But if you take one object and go to deeper and deeper, either from the beginning side or from the cessation side, you are bound to see, go under the water level, there's a big phenomena, big part appear unrevealed. So I would like to compare the what is the appear above the water level or tip of the iceberg. We can say chara dukkha vyadhi dukkha marana dukkha, that is to say the old age, sickness and the death. But huge part underneath that you don't feel in the day-to-day activities unless otherwise you are an experienced yogi. And there are huge amount in the, if you take the example of the tip of the iceberg, tip is representing only 1/10 of the iceberg, 1/9 is underneath, and that part exists, whether you know it or not. So therefore the Buddha says, even if you answer the tip of the iceberg, huge part is underneath, that is called bhava dukkha, not the jati dukkha. So therefore, if you wish to get rid of the dukkha, the suffering completely, your tactic, which is dealing only with the already arisen suffering, will not sufficient to you the total answer. So therefore, even if you know the old day sickness and the death, disease caused by the birth is caused by the existence. That existence, usually, you never feel in our day-to-day life. So therefore, from jati dukkha to bhava dukkha, there's a spiritual endeavorance, there's a religious endeavorance. So by a particular method only, you can feel it, you can experience it, unless otherwise you will call this is a something divine, something not belongs to the human experience. So therefore Buddha says, this bhava dukkha, that is existential suffering part, is also a part and partial of the meditator. So not only understanding this prominent jati dukkha, that is death, old age and diseases, but there's existence. So in order to understand that existence, the basic character, the basic mental factor you need is the concentration. So with mindfulness and the concentration, you are bound to see not only the day-to-day suffering, but existential suffering. The Buddha is the only person who revealed it and presented in a theoretical basis, and he gave a rational, deductive value for that, and expressed that is possible thing, that is a must for you to get the complete understanding of the suffering. So therefore, first tackle the jati dukkha, that means the prominent suffering, or what is perceivable by your faculties, by your eye, your ear, your nose, your tongue, your body. But once that is being understood, you have to go deep into that. There is a kind of existence that is to be, which normal faculties can't see. So therefore your consciousness, you have to understand, at least to go into this on theoretical basis, it has this faculty connected understanding, that is called Indriya Baddha Vijnana. But below, underneath that, there's another type whereby when and where you tackle successfully the five hindrances, when the mind falls calm and collected on the object, and when the object also becomes subtle, that the continuity, that flux, that existence, one may question, am I responsible for that? Is it worthwhile to go into that? Because except the teaching of the Buddha, all the other religions claim that existence is belong to Supreme Being or Creator God. Can we being a human being tackle that kind of thing? Is it our prime duty? So therefore many, even at the rational level, deductive level, not ready to go into that. They try to patch up with this old age diseases and the death with the secular knowledge, and they think that is the understanding and that is the development of the human. But the Buddha says that is also a necessary, important initial part, but by just mere understanding, deliverance from this jati dukkha won't answer the question. According to the Buddha, only answer about very little fraction, but huge amount, just like the iceberg under the water, huge part, you have to experience it, you have to deal it with, and there are tactics. That only we call samatha bhavana and vipassana bhavana, or concentration technique and the restrainment and the inside restrainment. So in order to go into that kind of deep layers, the Buddha always recommend in the early part of your meditation, take something corporeal, take something material, like the in-breath and out-breath, or rising and falling, or your walking meditation, or whatever the thing you experience through your sense organs, and to go into deep, it must be a repetitive one. The object must be a repetitive object, and it must not stimulate either pleasure or pain. It must be a neutral one. Observe it for a long time. When and where your mind is unprepared, mindfulness is not set properly steadfast, you will see only the tip of the object. That's enough. That is good. With that, if you keep on observe immediately, vigilantly, diligently, slowly, slowly, you will see the beginning part of the object and the end cessation part of the object. That is how the mindfulness is gaining the ground and the concentration sets in. So when that happens, the individual characteristic of the particular objects may disappear or fade off or not so prominent, the common characterizes. So when and where that happens, if you go prepared, that will not give a trouble for you, but many go unprepared, therefore they are not tackling it properly, so get disheartened. They give up the object, give up the teacher, give up the meditation method, thinking my meditation is not continuous because object is changing its shape, changing its manner, changing its qualities. So, but without falling into that trap, if you go continuously, the object becomes very subtle, sometimes unperceivable. From that onward only, you can go into the subtle layers of the meditation. That means that according to the teaching of the Buddha says this existential suffering has three layers, karma bhava, arupa bhava, arupa bhava. The karma bhava is the part that you can feel, can experience, you can touch with your faculties. But with the help of that, once you develop the mindfulness and the concentration, you go to the rupa bhava, that is a very subtle sphere, and they are basically the five hindrances are not much active because of your skillful method, and are going to understand the very subtle layer, subtle existence, and they are also, you feel the jhanic experiences according to the concentration explanation, but in the vipassana way, you feel the jhanic factors, even whether you are not mastering into the concentration techniques. So with this, with the help of jhanic factors only, you can develop the mastery about this non-contactable, very subtle layers, and that is the point that we are reaching to the existential or bhava. So therefore the Buddha says even the jati arising or appearance or conception, it has its own reason, it has its own specific conditionality, that is means bhava. Bhava means the basic existence. If you have any desire, if you have any recognition, identification with the bhava, and it is going to give again and again the jati, that means a rebirth and rounds of death and the birth. So therefore, even if you answer the question for this particular human existence, you are bound to get another existence later, and they are again the old age, again the diseases, again the death can happen. So therefore, not only answering this jati dukkha, your answer will be complete. You have to go and understand the bhava dukkha, that is existential suffering. That is what the most religious part, deep part of the teaching. So, I don't claim this is only explaining Buddhism, but even the, before the time of the Buddha, the people knew it about that and they had certain amount of experience on this jhanic experiences. But the only thing was they thought the answer for this old age sicknesses and the death is the jhanic experiences. And they thought it is lasting. So that is the flaw. That's a mistake of it. But the Buddha use it as a tool, use it as a utility value in order to get rid of this gross old age sickness and the death. Temporarily, you can go and abide by these jhanic experiences. There you never feel, you will not feel this personal unhappiness. Instead, you feel rapture and the joy. There won't be any discontent. There will be a kind of a contentment. And there won't be a psychological stress in the jhanic experience. But even then, if you develop kind of a desire, clinging to that kind of thing, ultimately you are bound to get another existence. So therefore, another birth. So therefore, the Buddha says, not only by the tackling of this birth and the death, you have to go into this existential suffering in these deep layers, and still you should not cling into this kind of jhanic experience, and then only you can understand, still lower the deep layers of the anusaya, that is hidden or perverted kind of defilement down there. So, in order to tackle it, you have to keep on practicing without clicking into this jhanic experience and keep on going doing there, you are bound to see whether you intentionally do something or not, whether you volitionally do something or not, there are some huge current underneath that is unintentional. Even unintentionally it is running. And even without your volition, it is running. So therefore, the day you understand this involuntary flux, which is running without your intention, without your volition, is the part most important to understand. So to go into that, the Buddha recommends you must first restrain your intentional physical actions. The intentional verbal actions. That is what we call the moral restrainment. And then intentional mental actions. And they are first, you are bound to see this calm and quiet mind. And when that happens, only you see these unintentional part also create some kind of suffering. But you feel as if you are not responsible. So these are the part the Buddha attribute to the your past karma and your liking and disliking and your personality traits. So they appear like good things, they appear like something your own created, but not in this very moment. So therefore, by familiarizing it, by understanding them, be with them, only you can understand. Once you restrain your bodily, physical and mental volitional activities, then only you are qualified to see this under the carpet dust or below the water layer level of the iceberg, and that explain huge part. And that is very difficult for the sensual beings, people are chasing behind this pleasure principle, to come into. Even if you people like us gave up this pleasure principle, we gave up our dear and near one and come and sit here without much of the physical attachment to them, but you understand how much they come in terms of sensuous desire or hate or sleepiness or doubts or remorse or excitement. So these are the ones that is happening like attacking our stream of consciousness, even though we have no any intentional will or wish for them. So they are also, we, that very person is responsible. The way the Buddha explained is to not to react with them, just to understand this is the under the carpet situation. And by familiarizing more and more, you are bound to understand this power, the existence, and how it is continuing even without our intention. So therefore, this understanding, you have to have huge familiarity, huge seasoning, and that part very difficult you find in the popular Buddhism. And Buddhism, whenever you are going to use for therapeutic and healing kind of thing, and they will never be patient enough to go into these deep layers. So they are always trying to see the utility value of the therapeutic and the healing part, but instead they consider them as your byproduct of your meditation, but you must go deep into these underlying tendencies and the obsessional kind of defilements. So when that is possible, only when the in-breath and out-breath become ceases to exist or become very subtle, so there you see the continuity. So when that continuity happens, some people, they, as and when the perceivable breath disappears or ceases to exist, they develop kind of a fear, kind of uncertainty, kind of doubts as to are going into the unknown area, going into the unknown sphere. So therefore, that we have to tackle it with the discussions and the interviews and encourage them to go there. And even if you go with successful, there's a danger of attachment to that, not only the fear, even the attachment to that. So therefore, for that also you must be immunized. And then by familiarizing it, you can understand the existential suffering is there. If you do not see the flaws, you get attached. But if you are continue and familiarize, season with them, you can go and understand the deep layers of anusaya. And for that, you not only sitting meditation, not only in walking meditation, your day-to-day activities, your, as I tried to mention yesterday, your verbal behavior, your physical activities, your livelihood, they all matters. In a meditation retreat or in a meditation sitting, you can just see the glimpse of it. You can see how it works. But when, if you have failed to apply in our day-to-day activities, to restrain in your unwanted talkings and unwanted physical activities, that is all physical misbehavior and verbal misbehavior, together with your livelihood, very difficult to get a real benefit of it. So that is the way of life we call the monastic life or celibate life, as we discussed yesterday. So in order to be qualified, in order to be prepared for this kind of monastic life or celibate life, for me as a person, I believe you must have experienced it in your meditation. Otherwise, if you are just by mere jumping into this monastic life and the celibate life without this theoretical, deductive and practical knowledge, I would alarm danger. So best thing is what is happening in the present day in the meditation sphere. Many people, irrespective of ordained and unordained, male and female, Buddhists and non-Buddhists, they try to taste it. Not only the gross part of the meditation, they go to the deep layers. And only the problem is they fail to apply that into in their day-to-day activities. So that is how a kind of ambiguity, there's a kind of a friction is arising. So even if you experience in the meditation, no one will force you. There's no such commitment, but the person who understand the danger of this existential suffering, they go in search of what is the way of physical behavior, verbal behavior, and the livelihood. That is how the monastic life came into being. So therefore, in a retreat we here try to understand the possibility of not only the jara, vyadhi, marana, the old age, diseases and the death, but underneath there are some rupa bhava, arupa bhava, some kind of a materialistic sphere, non-materialistic sphere that is not applicable to our day-to-day activities, but you can go with the mindfulness and the concentration. When you go there, just like this sensuous pleasure, you have to go through it. You have to understand it with the danger of flows in each and every, and go more and more deep in that only, you will understand that our suffering is not in one single layer. There are many, many layers. The most gross one is the one that we find the karma loka, the sensuous pleasure. And when you go there deep and deep, as layer by layer, as if you are removing a sheet by sheet in a banana trunk. Outermost layer is very gross, very hardy. And removing, you are going to the very soft and subtle layers and continue with that. And for that, the mindfulness doing a tremendous job from this touchable, concrete materiality to going to the mentality and then further on. And when there is going, there is an evolution in the mindfulness itself. Mindfulness also becoming steadfast. Ultimately, even though you are using this very mindfulness as a tool to understand the sensuous pleasure and the jhanic pleasure and the all the meditative pleasures, so that very mindfulness ultimately you have to see under the light of the transient nature. The very mindfulness also ultimately leading to suffering. And it is also a non-self characteristics. So even for the beginner, you see sometimes when you are successful, your mindfulness is steadfast. And immediately it becomes beyond your control. You become unmindful. You become not diligent, negligence. So they are the beginner always happy with the mindful, diligent moments and unhappy with the unmindful and negligent thought moments. But whenever you become a senior meditator, experienced meditator, matured, you will equally accept the mindful, diligent thought moments as well as unmindful, negligent mind thought moments also. Because when you keep on practicing, not only your in-breath and out-breath is subject to change from the arising moment, gross moment to disappearing and cessation, not only your out-breath also going to the same wave, your mindfulness also has its very origin, has its changing nature and disappearing, and your concentration, your wisdom, everything you have to understand come under the existential suffering. So, maturing or developing the indifference towards that, I find the most challenging task, so that the Buddha take that quality as unshakable quality, unshakability, not only towards the arising and passing away of the in-breath and out-breath, not only towards the rising and passing away of the rising and falling, if you take it as an example, not only the left and the right, not only the everything, but even the very the mindfulness, even the very concentration, even this very wisdom, what we respect, they also come under the existential suffering. So that is why when you keep on practicing, understanding the gravity of this existential suffering, you take them as mere tools. You take them as just to get the job done. And once that is finished, you are not going to hold them. You are not going to develop attachment to them. That is the difference between the Samatha meditation and the Vipassana meditation or concentration meditation and the insight meditation. In the insight meditation, each and every part, each and every tool, each and every technique, use them as a tool for utility value, because you are always keep an eye towards the existence suffering. Anything you are going to get attached, whenever such a thing is going to change, undergoing transience, transformation, you are the one to suffer. So if you use them in a utility value without the attachment, their transient nature will not inflict suffering, and you accept things are happening according to the dependent origination, not with your not one's self or soul. So you are becoming open more and more to understand cause and effect relationship rather than getting them in your personal or self-oriented calculation. So that is why the Buddha says this dependent origination, it's a very profound, and it appears like very profound. So people, instead of understanding cause and effect relationship, they have their own pet ideas, their pet way of argumenting, way of views, and they try to see the phenomena through these views, through these argument methods, and they fail to see the totality of the picture. So they always and almost try to reduce the jati dukkha, that is to say, the old age, the sickness and the death or any other, the day-to-day suffering, but they fail to see existential suffering. So therefore, once the Buddha revealed about this jati dukkha, he says jati dukkha is due to bhava dukkha. So therefore, if someone wish to understand the picture in totality, don't stop at the jati, the secret level. It has to go into the deep layers to understand the bhava, and don't think it is beyond humanity. The Buddha says, if you really understand in that practice, you can not only see the mechanism, how you get entangled, and that very mechanism help you to get disentangled. So therefore, more and more you go into the dependent origination, or understanding the specific condition, the conditionality, you can explain, you can understand, you can interpret why these things are happening in the world within you, outside you, within your will and beyond your will. And that very understanding not only give the explanation about what is happening in the day-to-day life, it gives the deliverance also. So therefore, at the beginning, you have to have enough patience to understand the phenomena. That is, you have to develop the distance from the phenomena, and you have to develop neutral observation before rushing to a decision. And these are the qualities of the mindfulness. So to understand, to verify, to experience it, the only way is mistakes. In the meditative life, in the monastic life, or the celibate life, each and every mistake is going to give you another viewpoint, another facet of the same dependent origination. But if you take it as a personal, if you're going to consider it as a misfortune or your mistake, your see-through vision will be disturbed. So therefore, at the beginning, of course, it is bewildered, it's opaque. But keep on practicing. You develop this foresight, you develop this confidence. So therefore, even though it is profound, even though it is like profound, by keep on practicing only, you can develop your own ways and means. And therefore, those who even practice, even take this endeavorance, are praiseworthy. That is why the Buddha advised Venerable Ananda, don't take it as a very light thing. It is profound. It appears like profound. But by keep on practicing only, you can go into the deep layers of this theoretical understanding as well as the practical part. So therefore, the beginners find difficult, but when you keep on practicing, you feel like your difficult part is nothing but an investment for the deep understanding. So that is how you appreciate your own past experience, past memories, past mistakes. So therefore, even though the Buddha has given the formula, then you have to thread this path with the help of your mistakes. That is how you become a practical person, rather than seeking help from the outside or outside sources. So at the beginning, of course, you are searching, seeking the outside sources. More and more you develop this, understand this existence suffering, you become more and more independent, more and more delivered, more and more liberated. So I hope today the talk also will be helpful for you to get a little clearer picture about the dependent origination. With that remark, I would like to stop the talk today. Thank you very much for listening.